Your time and expertise are valuable, making focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
So welcome to Pax Europeana, to the debate about peace in Europe and about Belarus. It's a section about EU days, and it's now the day for solidarity with Belarus. The 7th of February 2021 was declared the day for solidarity with free Belarus. And I call everybody to participate, contribute, and think about Belarus. It's one of the most tragic stories in European post-Cold War history, and maybe in European history at all. It's a very tragic fate of this country, and I will outline now and explain you what happened to this sad place in the recent history, and it is quite dramatic, actually. Yeah. So let me come back to the so-called sixth term election of President Lukashenko. He is quite a character, this one of the worst European politicians in history, and he has now not Putin, at least it has his fourth term. He has now his sixth term. His sixth term, I repeat. Yeah, he was first time elected in 1994, and since then he has made falsification and manipulation of each single elections, and he is now had felt the necessity to basically impose himself on this poor country and its poor people a sixth time on the 9th of August 2020. And obviously it was totally rigged and manipulated election, there's no doubt about it. And actually the people know it, and they mostly have voted for the opposition candidate, which basically was only the opposition candidate because Lukashenko has imprisoned everybody else. Yeah? She's a very courageous woman. She grew above herself. She is called Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, and she is really the president of Belarus now. She should be recognized by the West. And if it's really time to roll, that the rolling over to Russia is over, then let's start with fully recognizing her as the government in exile, as the president in exile, and give her the resources and the support she is needed to sustain the struggle until Belarus is free and there can be a European Belarus. I personally think it will not be so easy, to be honest. I want to be realistic, because after 27 years in a totalitarian regime, and also Lukashenko being very experienced to survive European sanctions, and this close integration of Belarus with Russia, where they basically have formed a state union. They have this open land border. They have a customs union. Belarus is in the Eurasian Economic Union, in the Eurasian Customs Union, in the anti-NATO, in the so-called Collective Security Treaty Organization, CSTO, this Russian-backed anti-NATO defense alliance. So it's not so easy, because as long as Russia financially and economically supports Belarus as a form of appendix to Russia, I'm not sure there is an easy way out to topple this regime, because it's an utter brutal and violent regime. They have now had a protest in Belarus since the 10th of August, since the rigged election result was announced, and basically almost every day these brave Belarusians are in the street. But the security apparatus and the state corporate sector which is very huge in this completely unreformed ex-Soviet republic, is very strong in a sense, because he has the money to from Russia and from the state sectors to sustain his police apparatus. And they all have committed so many crimes that they know that the future of them would be in jail. So there is a strong knit, a strong bond between the state corporate sector, the state security sector, the Lukashenko clique, and also Russia backing it up. So that's the situation of that tragic state. And with this weak Western policy response, and I really hope that President Biden will, yesterday he has announced that the time when America was simply rolling over to Russia and Putin's grip of autocracy is over. Yes, I hope that. That would be really necessary. And Belarus is the first test. But let's see if there is really change coming immediate. I personally think change will come in the medium term, and Belarus will fall together with the Russian autocracy in the next 4 years, I think 2024. And when this is the reality, then we have to sustain the opposition exile government in best based either in Brussels or in Vilnius in order to really make sure that there is a viable government alternative in the moment the Lukashenko regime collapses, which I hope will be very soon. So that's my call, to have very strict sanctions against Belarusian state companies, not targeted sanctions against some individuals. Please note that in most of the 26, soon 27 years in power, the European Union and the West had some form of sanctions against the Lukashenko regime. It was varying in some phases. There was some softening. There was some, you know, from time to time, there was a thaw between the relations between Lukashenko and the West, for some reasons, I don't know, probably the idea to break him away from Russia, which was ridiculous. Some economic interests might have played a role. And somehow he was also seen as standing up to Putin by some. And it was also seen as something where there is a chance to break him away. Especially he was not so much in favor of the Russian intervention in Ukraine. And so there was a little bit of hope that he might be coming to senses. But given the past of his activities, which I describe now, I think it was always completely unrealistic to expect it. Let's first describe this gentleman. He is the quintessential red director. I explained that phenomenon already. That's basically the Soviet directors of state-owned companies which have survived then the political turmoil and the end of the Soviet Union, and by being already in military and politically and economically on the top, they stayed on the top. And most of these red directors have then privatized companies and are big economic actors. But he has chosen the political path, and since 1994 he is in power. It's about the same as if Chernomyrdin, he is the equivalent, the prime minister from 92 to 99 in Russia, if he would be still, or 98, if he would be still the president today. And it's the sixth term now from 94, where this red director, this quintessential Soviet product, who was the manager of a kolkhoz and a military asset, a military trained officer, of the Soviet Union, he has somehow taken, nobody looked too much. He knew he had this opportunity. He took the control and he had no intention to give it up ever. And it's an illusion that he will simply retire. No, he will either go down in a bloody revolution or he will die in office. Yeah? There is no alternative for that. Yeah? He will not simply roll over. That's for sure. And here comes the proof. I remember how he made his second term possible. In the essential year 99, with Putin's rise to power, the Chechen war, and also the Yugoslavian war against the Milosevic dictatorship, which also, by the way, always notice, the Serbs and the Belarusians, they have a very strong link. a lot of money links, a lot of criminals from Serbia having moved to Belarus, and a lot of arms deals. And even recently, you know, the Serbian government in 2020, it took a lot of international pressure to convince them that in September they cancelled the participation in the military maneuvers. After all this happened, after the six terms manipulation, the Serbian government was absolutely about going to this Slavic Brotherhood military maneuvers in September 2020, and it took massive European and American pressure to get this stopped. Yeah? And then the defense minister of Serbia, he said, "Oh, the Europeans went crazy and it was a lot of pressure. We had to do it. I'm very sorry." So far for that. We have to understand with whom we have to work here and who is the reality. Who is this basically hostile state? That's Lukashenko's Belarus. In 99, he basically decapitated, I calling about killing, imprisoning. It's called forced abductions when you read in the internet about it, yeah. But what is forced abductions? Yeah, you take you jail somebody and you give him back dead, yeah, or he disappears and he is no more to be found ever in the world, yeah. And that's a killing, that's political killing. Basically, all of the leadership, or this were five persons of the opposition party within the framework of 2-3 months, were disappearing and never to be seen again. That's what we call a decapitation of the political opposition. And so it was. Then he was re-elected. And so basically he has acted similar. And that was the wildest thing. That was basically a coup d'etat from the government against any form of opposition. And so it happened in this tragic year of 99. The opposition, there are so many brave people, not only in 2020. Never forget, the opposition movement of the Belarusians were active from 94 onwards. They were coming to Poland, they were coming to Brussels. I met many of them. I know some of them very nice and personally. We worked together in these Brussels years when I was there, also in the student years in EDS. And I was in Warsaw protesting. I actually went also in, I think it was in 98, I went to Minsk myself. I was twice in Minsk. And once was with a Polish member of the parliament, with Adam. He was a very young and active personality. We went and we, for one day from Warsaw, to make a press conference later in Warsaw about our trip. And it was really terrible, actually. So what I want to say, it's not a new story. There are brave and courageous people in Belarus to protest against Lukashenko since 1994. Everybody knew what he did in 94 was wrong. In these years, there was a really strong movement in all over Europe to protest against his dictatorship. Yeah? Already then, he was seen as the last dictator of Europe, the one Soviet leftover. And it's then it was in 96, it was in 99, the crimes when he killed the opposition leaders. Then it was in 2006, when after the Rose Revolution and the Orange Revolution, there was the so-called Jeans Revolution. I don't know why they call it Jeans, but somehow Demin Revolution, but there was this effort again, yeah? And so on, in 2011, in 2015, all the time, yeah? And now again, now it's really massive because the people see how desperate they are. And I want to reiterate, all the time they were isolated, yeah? There is complete control of the society. The KGB is still called KGB in Belarus. Yeah? And then also the economic situation. The Belarusian ruble is in a really close competition with the Yugoslavian dinar as the worst currency in post-war Europe. And this I can include until from 48 onwards. Yeah? You know, but for sure in the Cold War, post-Cold War Europe, the Belarusian ruble had a crisis after the end of the Soviet Union. When it was started, it was from the beginning a disaster, a complete collapse. And then obviously it was in 98 in the framework of the Russian currency crisis, complete disaster. And then came the next one, obviously in 2008, a total disaster. Okay, that was a global crisis. Then came the 2011 complete collapse. Yeah? The 2015, that was then the third ruble reform. it was not only devaluated, but 2015, it was introduced the third version of the new Belarusian ruble. That's the third currency reform in just 30 years. And this one has also devalued because Lukashenko makes the policy, you know, like the typical strongman. I put it on like I want everybody to earn $500 a month. Yes, okay. But what is the reality? It's $120. And these are the conditions. It's really a disaster from a democracy perspective, from geostrategic perspective, from economic perspective, from human perspective. In every aspect, it's a complete disaster. While the country is very nice, I was there again in 2018 in the winter. You know, they have nice people, nice buildings, great boulevards. You know, they have also infrastructure. In that sense, they have built motorways and all these things, and the city is clean. It doesn't look like a slummer, so don't have that impression. It's just, you know, the typical Etatis kind of dream where everything is police organized, state organized, but everything has to be nice when the dictator moves around. He wants to see his building projects, basically. They also have support and they are basically part of the Russian economic space. And they also have some investments of China. So there is some things happening. Even he's trying this kind of typical economically benevolent dictatorship, but completely incompetent and leading to currency collapse. And that's also when we want to really see change in Belarus. We have to stop the economic basis of his dictatorship. And these are this basically 8 to 10 big state-owned companies, because there was never any kind of privatization effort meaningful. But what they have is obviously this kind of 10, let's call it, two refineries, because it's a big transit point from Russian carbon towards Europe. They have two big refinery companies. I will not go and torture the names of the companies. It's always these long names where it's everything with Naft and with Bela. But okay, it's all on the internet, in Wikipedia, the list of the state-owned companies. But they have this Kali conglomerates, they have these steel companies, and they have these petrol refineries, basically. And they have it's Potash and Kali, which is also very big. And so basically it's maybe even fewer companies, 7 big ones. And they are basically the big base of employment. They are the big base of financial support for the Lukashenko regime. And who is buying all this stuff? Mainly the European Union. Okay, maybe EFTA and UK, but mainly we. So if we would stop to buy from the Lukashenko state corporate and impose an import ban, because of this extreme human rights violation he is doing since 26 years. I mean, this country is the only country in Europe, not in, that's another thing, Kosovo as well, not Kosovo, that's very unfair. But Belarus is not in the Council of Europe because it is still with the death penalty. I mean, where, in what kind of country that is? It's completely mess. And it's nice people. Again, I know many Belarusians. They are really, the difference is very, very little between the Polish and the Ukrainians in all aspects. They are a little bit restrained and careful, and they have this terrible destiny of being in this kind of dictatorship conditions. And I really feel very sorry, and I admire the courage of so many young people who don't want to live in this last leftover of the Soviet Union, if you want to describe it like this. And it's really a terrible destiny. So I hope for a change, but it depends on us. If the time for rollover is over, then let's show. Let's really sanction the state companies. Let's make a real exile government. Let's put it in Vilnius or in Brussels. Let's fund it. Let's not give any money anymore to the Belarusian dictatorship. Not the Eastern Partnership, not EIB funding. Let's freeze all the financial support for that regime. It's time for the collapse. They have resources, there will be 2 more years maybe going, but then it's over. And then you have to integrate with Russia completely. Good, if that's the way. But then let's openly see it as an annexed country as well. And let's Russia annex it if they want it. and then we can say clearly where the things are. So let's not fool ourselves that we can make any compromises with Lukashenko. I mean, he has blood on his hands so much. Yeah? I mean, you want to invite him to the European Council and welcome him as a great statesman? I don't think so. So I talked about many of the currency things, the sanction things. I think I made it very clear. I would like also to outline the Austrian complicity, because many states, they have this whole idea that doing compromises and investments is very good to soften it up. That might be a good strategy for maybe China. I'm in favor of that. But in the case of the Lukashenko regime, that the Austrians have all this banking business, which is abused for a lot of money laundering, that we have this complicity in the telecom sector, which is on demand by the Belarusian authorities to cut off all the internet for the demonstrators and so on. That's quite outrageous. Yeah? Austria was also one of the few countries which welcomed Lukashenko like an international hero in 2008 still, yeah, in this kind of appeasement drive. Thinking that he is a great statesman or whatever, and then to welcome in this kind of red carpets in Vienna in the Hofburg, Van der Bellen, who was elected to be the hero of the human rights and of the good side of Austria, I really was appalled by that. But it's in the tradition of Austrian complicity with Putin, obviously. I'm sure the Russians asked for that visit as well, and so it was exactly how it was, yeah. A shame again, a visit of shame, but it was not as shameful as the 2014 visit of Putin in Vienna. Don't forget that. That was the biggest shameful moment in Austrian post-Cold War history. So we come to the point of what we should do. We should do with this exile government. Obviously support it, but also to be open towards the Belarusians. The Belarusians are one of the few nations and people in Europe which still need a visa for the European Union, Schengen visa. Like Kosovo, like Armenia, like Azerbaijan, it's Belarus. It's only four countries which don't have this basic visa-free regime towards the European Union and the Schengen area. So what needs to be done? Now it's very easy. Let's get the Belarusians who are not on any kind of state company and state secret service, let have them visa-free travel towards the European Union and give everybody who is in the opposition also a work permit in Lithuania and in all European Union. Let him, Lukashenko, for the time have the land. Yeah, we will not do any military takeover. We are not in that position, nor do we want any war. Huh? Let him have the land for the moment, yeah? But the people will be with us. And if he wants to build the Berlin Wall, then let him turn his kind of Belarus in the GDR of the 2020s, yeah? Yeah, we cannot change it anyhow. It's obviously not fine, but that's one option. But let's make sure that the people are with us. If you are an opposition or activist and you have to hide for a moment, or if you see no future, or the authorities want to jail you, please, let's do it like the Lithuanians and offer them some work permit and some place to stay, some social assistance, and let's have the people in freedom in Poland, in Austria, in the Czech Republic, or in Germany. In all of European Union, we should be open for the Belarusians, yeah? And, you know, when they come, then it's maybe the Belarusian authorities who jail them, but not our border police at the Polish border, at the Ukrainian border, at the Lithuanian border, who are rejecting them because they have no Schengen visa. I mean, that's crazy. Everybody should be welcomed. Every Belarusian should be welcomed. And so, by the way, also everybody from Kosovo and from Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan, anyhow, I think not many will come. From Kosovo, maybe some will come. Yeah? But it's good we are a big European Union. Have you seen the tweet of President Biden recently about the new changes? We are now back to openness and to reason. And it has to be also open. Europe has to be open for the Belarusians. They are heroes, everybody says on tweets, but we don't want to welcome them in the European Union. That is utterly wrong. So That's, I think, what we have to do. We also have then to integrate this exile government to really join all the institutions, build up a real structure. The moment Lukashenko falls, this exile government has to be ready for governance of this republic. Yeah? There will be a European Belarus. Let me also address this issue, which is totally wrong, that now the Ukrainian revolution was pro-European, pro-NATO, and the Belarusians are not pro-Europe and not pro-NATO. Let's make a huge difference here. Ukraine, even under Yanukovych, yeah, it was not the dictatorship of Belarus. Yeah? Yanukovych was a brutal kleptocrat, that's true, but there was relative free conditions in a sense, even in the short period where he had complete control between 2010 and 2014. Yeah? You know, before, it was a very pro-Western democracy under Orange Ukraine. It's us having rejected it. Yeah? And even before, it was also not the Lukashenko of Soviet kind of dictatorship. Even under the prior regimes before 2014 and in the 90s, yeah, it was maybe chaotic in the 90s, and it was also not perfect. I don't say it was perfect under any of the periods, yeah, but it was not such a dictatorship like Belarus all the time was since 94, and it was also not this level of brutal killings, yeah, like and the suppression which Lukashenko has done. So ultimately, the issue that the people now not protesting with European or with NATO flags, yeah, is obviously also related that it would be really very, very dangerous for them to do so. I'm sure that when they see the possibilities of Poland to be a new Lithuania, I'm sure the Belarusians will choose that, and then instead choosing to be in the state union with Russia. They're just afraid, you know, to have the tanks rolling into Minsk, or to have being in jail when they have additional the issue of Europeanization of Belarus. But that the future of Belarus is within the European world. Absolutely, 100%, there is no doubt about it. Does anybody there really want to join the Russian world? When they have the choice? I don't think so. I'm not advocating now NATO membership of Belarus, or, you know, it's unrealistic and it's also EU membership, you know, but to join the Southeastern European structures, to join SEFTA, Regional Cooperation Council, to get into this kind of networking, or like Serbia is. Yeah? Also, Serbia is a very complicated country, by the way. Belarus will stay a very complicated country. Maybe a lot of people there have also some different opinions about their future, you know. It might be. So, nevertheless, but that the future is integrated in the Western European trading system, that they are similar to Ukraine and Lithuania in their outreach and thinking, once they will be free. And, you know, that long-term also, maybe in 50 years, they can also join the European Union and NATO, or maybe in 30 years, who knows that, yeah? I'm, of course, hoping they will sooner than later. But, you know, that is a long process for Belarus. It's not a realistic perspective like it is for Moldova or for Ukraine. So, and for Georgia, because they are more or less all ready to go into the European Union in this decade, as you know very well when you have listened to my podcasts up to now. So what is the story here? On the 7th of February, there is this EU Day. I call for everybody to participate. I think about what happened to the poor people of Belarus this whole, now since August, this 4 months, this half a year. But think about also what happened to them since 94. They had the same hopes like the Ukrainians and the Lithuanians to be free, but obviously they were still the last ones to leave out of the three core republics of the Soviet Union and this Belarusian accords, actually, in Belavezhia. That was the end of the Soviet Union when it was sealed, when the three republics, Belarus, Ukraine, and Russia, decided to leave in different directions and be independent states, yeah. And then they had this accord, and they were, of course, really of significance. That was in Belarus. So thanks, Belarus, for that. And since that, basically, the takeover was immediate. In 94, Lukashenko came to power. And since then, he has tortured, abused and exploited the poor people of Belarus. And I hope that's very soon over. But we definitely have to work for it. It's not automatically that they will fall. He will never relinquish power in Belarus without a fight. And he will definitely have him trying to be elected again. And there will be no kind of replacement. He will not allow himself to be replaced by anybody close to Putin or something like this. I don't think so. So what we need to do is to build up the structures to replace him and economically to make sure that the people who support him, the oligarchs and state-owned companies in Belarus, that they are not allowed to sell to the European consumers and to the Ukrainian consumers anymore. And we will find other suppliers. But they have for 26 years supported this terrible power grip, this killing and decapitation of the opposition, this suppression of the peaceful protest which we have now, and so on and so on. There is nothing good in the Lukashenko regime. There's nothing to be improved. It's either they go, and possible they will go down in a very tragic, bloody way, or they will be basically staying for years to come. And that's the most terrible outcome. But we have to work in the medium term and make sure that this exile government has the resources, is supported, is recognized, is also integrated in all European structures, and he can, for the moment, maybe keep the land. Yeah? But the people, they will be with Europe. And Europe is with the people of Belarus. Thanks a lot, and think about the 7th of February to be the day for European and free Belarus. Solidarity with Belarus now. Thanks a lot.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.